Good afternoon, everyone. Before we turn to the main part of the briefing, I'll just give you an update on today's figures. The total tests undertaken now stands at 3,670. The tests back and returned have both been 3,651, so we have 19 tests outstanding. The total number of confirmed cases continues to be 329, and there have been no new cases since yesterday. The number of active cases now stands at 39. Turning to today's briefing, today is the anniversary of VE Day. Many of us expected to be marking the day by having a street party, taking part in organised events, or by paying our respects at religious services. Today we showed our respect by doing this virtually. Today we demonstrated our dignity by staying indoors. Today we showed our pride in our Manx nation and waved our flag in living rooms and bedrooms rather than outside. And never have I felt so honoured to be a Manxman than to see the island come together in the way that it has today. We have used many references to war in these daily press conferences. We have talked about strengthening our armour, shoring up defences, and our determination to fight back against the virus. Words that were all too familiar in 1945, and words I thought I would never have to say in 2020. We have been and are asking the general public to make sacrifices to their daily lives, changing routine, doing things differently, not seeing friends and loved ones in order to support the greater good of our society. Just as the generation 75 years ago was asked to make sacrifices, much greater sacrifices than the ones we have been asked to make today, with many of them making the ultimate sacrifice, who never again set foot on home shores. And for those that made those sacrifices for us, today we remember them. Today I'm delighted to be joined by Edmund Southworth, the Chief Executive of Manx National Heritage, who will talk to us about how they have supported these virtual events. I am also equally delighted to be joined by Major Charles Wilson, who has played a huge part in organising events, not just today, but to mark the work of the armed services throughout the year and also in previous years as well. Thank you to both of you for your support in organising events today. This morning we joined the United Kingdom in observing a 2-minute silence. And this afternoon at 2:55 p.m, a bugler played the last post from the summit of Snae Fell, followed at 3 p.m. by a piper who played Battles Over and VE Day 75, a new piece composed especially for today's events. These joined in sync with hundreds of other locations around the world, including the highest peaks of the four nations of the United Kingdom. And I would like to echo the Chief Minister's earlier words and thank the bugler, Matt Creer of the Royal British Legion, and the piper, Dr. John Struthers of Ellen Vannon Pipes and Drums, for volunteering to undertake this act of remembrance. This event has been captured on video and shared on social media and will be made available to anyone that requests it. The Treasury has issued a commemorative gold sovereign and a special issue of 50 pence pieces with images of VE Day in 1945, including Churchill with his famous V for Victory hand gesture, Manx residents celebrating in the streets, and a soldier returning home to his family. I also know that the Royal British Legion standard bearers around the island joined a UK-wide initiative to parade and salute in their homes or gardens this afternoon. I would like to thank everyone who shared their photos on social media, and for those that haven't done so yet, please do so. If COVID-19 has taught us anything, it shows that we can work as one island, as one community, and we showed that again today. Thank you to everyone who used the VE Day toolkit to throw the stay-at-home garden party, and who stayed at home to participate in the nation's toast to heroes. So I will now hand over to Edmund for the role Manx National Heritage have played today.
Thank you, Minister. The Isle of Man has always played its part in defending Britain and the Commonwealth. Our position in the centre of the Irish Sea is clearly strategically important, and it's been so in two world wars. World War II in particular saw three airfields constructed, a massive undertaking, and a wide range of training establishments based here for the UK effort. As in every conflict before and since, Manx people joined the military, serving in many different branches of the armed services around the world. Civilians too joined the war effort, for example, in the ships of the Steam Packet Company, requisitioned and then sadly lost at Dunkirk. The economic impact on the home front was dramatic, with tourism halted overnight, and we know what that's like. And the presence of so many members of the armed forces and indeed civilian internees brought significant change to the island's way of life. It's not surprising that the end of the war brought huge relief. Life was to remain tough for many years to come, but VE Day was a brief opportunity for the community to celebrate together. Manx National Heritage has been proud to work with partners such as the British Legion, Culture Vanin, the Department for Education, Schools and Culture to support the anniversary of VE Day. This has included reminding people about music and wartime recipes for people to have their own garden party. And as you've heard from the Minister, the toast at 3 p.m. today, which I did with a cup of tea and Glenn Miller in the background. MNH holds the national memory in the form of archives and artifacts from the island's history. And over a million of these records are digitised. We've made all of these available to our local and worldwide community free of charge at this time. And this week we've curated a very special selection of 100 images representing the six-year wartime period. In 1945, the newspapers of the time reported in great detail the events around VE Day. We've drawn a special selection of these together again online. They are especially poignant as they list many of the servicemen and women who had been in prison of war camps and were now returning to the island to see their loved ones for the first time in years. And of course, there were lists of all those who would never be returning. Our Labyrinth History and Action players have used extracts from the newspapers to retell just a selection of these personal stories, which have been broadcast today in three programmes on Manx Radio. And if you haven't heard them or want to hear them again, tune in from 8:30 p.m. tonight on Manx Radio, just before the Queen's address to the nation. It's been a real privilege to support our community in this way at this time, and I'm very grateful to all my team who've made it possible. Thank you, Minister.
Thank you very much, Edmund. And if I could now hand over to Major Wilson.
Thank you, Minister. First of all, I would like, on behalf of the military community, to thank you and your staff for all the work that you've been doing. We think that it's been absolutely excellent. You made correct decisions to close down as quickly as possible and to seal the borders of our island. And we are grateful for that because you have surely, in doing that, saved lives. Thank you. The Royal British Legion is, of course, the guardian of remembrance. Now, normally, that remembrance has been with regard to military remembrance. This year, because of COVID-19, it has brought a different perspective for us. And we are remembering all the deaths that have occurred, but we're also remembering all the effort that has been put in.
Oh, we've lost Major Wilson there. We will come back to Charles when we've got him. But in the meantime, I'll bring in any questions. We'll move to questions from the media. We will get Charles back. And first up on my list, I've got Sam from Isle of Man Newspapers.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ashford. I think we should address the elephant in the room with the bank holiday. Can we get an explanation as to what's happened with all this, please? Because obviously it appeared on the tin with all the paper that senior race day one was being cut, but there was never a mention of an additional one until this morning's committee hearing. Can we just get a bit of an idea of what's gone on?
The plan was that there would be the additional bank holiday announced before it actually went to Tynwald. because we needed to confirm the date. It hadn't been, it had been talked about since we'd actually discussed about cancelling the senior race day bank holiday, because one of the things we thought was in relation to the community, and lots of things aren't operating at the moment. So there's certain types of retail that aren't operating. Certainly pubs, clubs, restaurants aren't in a normal circumstance. So we felt, rather than having a senior race day bank holiday, would it not be better later in the year to have a bank holiday which could recognise all of the work that our healthcare professionals, our entire frontline staff, and also our wider community had actually done around the pandemic. So there was various dates floating around, so one hadn't been agreed on. This obviously came up at the press conference yesterday. The Chief Minister gave a straight answer to a straight question. He was asked, was Senior Race Day being cancelled? And the answer was yes. But at that point, we couldn't confirm the other date because Council of Ministers hadn't approved it. So because it leaked out yesterday, this morning, Council of Ministers was actually asked to confirm which date they wanted to go for, and that's why this morning at the hearing the Minister for DfE was able to announce it, because you've got to understand we can't announce things on the hoof without having first of all had Council of Ministers' approval. But the plan all along was to have a bank holiday later in the year in order to recognise and honour all the work, which is a tremendous amount of work across our whole community that has gone on. And obviously we hope by then that there will be more parts of the economy opened up so people can benefit from the extra spending that bank holidays normally usually bring.
And if you want to go back to Major Wilson and then come back to me.
Charles is back with us, so we'll go back to you. Sorry, Charles, we lost you briefly there.
I'm not quite sure where, but it's not unusual for me to get lost. I'm not quite sure exactly where we got lost. However, talking of later in the year, I have agreed now with the Chief Minister that on November 22nd, we will hopefully hold an event in the Villa Marina, and that will fold in all our military days of the year. Now, we've missed this, we've missed Armed Forces Day, which was going to be at the end of June. We will miss VJ Day, and we must not forget VJ Day, because in England that is going to be commemorated on the 14th of August. And then, of course, Armistice itself. So I've agreed with the Villa Marina to run an event on the 22nd of November. So we will be running up all the military events into that on the 22nd of November. And I'm looking forward to that enormously. The idea is that we will hold a divine service, and hopefully at that time, the Bishop, the Lord Bishop, will sign the Armed Forces Covenant, because I have agreed with the diocese that they will be part and parcel of the Armed Forces Covenant. We will then have our usual tea, hopefully, and then in the evening we will move from remembrance to come out to a celebration, and we will then have a concert of some sort in the evening. But that yet has not yet been planned, but the date is firm, the 22nd of November.
Well, that is absolutely excellent news, Charles, and I know our Ireland community will get fully behind that. And it is important that we do get something into the calendar this year to be able to mark that, both, as you say, as remembrance and also celebration. So thank you very much for all your efforts on that part.
Not at all. Lots of people are making efforts. And of course, contact has been maintained by the military charities, and particularly by the Royal British Legion and SAFA, during this time with people who are in need. And at the younger end, and I'm always pleased when I see the younger end taking part, we've had a massive help from the Army Cadet Force. And what they have done is to open a Just Giving page. And they have reached their target this very day of £750. They use the expression 75. So lots of people did lots of things. For example, one of the lieutenants, Sean Domingo, walked 75 kilometres. Lance Bombardier Hidson, he cycled 75 kilometres. Lance Bombardier Bradley, a mountain bike to the peak of South Peru, and then did a race afterwards. And Cadet Grace Straw walked 7.5 kilometres every day. even, I am told by himself, they're aging, and he's not aging, Commandant Major O'Regan, 7.5 miles every day. So the Army cadets have been really involved in this, and it's great to see those young people doing things which are focused on the whole business of COVID-19.
Absolutely marvellous, some absolutely amazing achievements in there, and as always, supporting our island community at the same time. So again, thank you to everyone who's been involved in all of those events, even if it's just supporting it monetarily, it will make a big difference. Thank you. So we did it. We went away from you, Sam, so we'll come back to you.
Thank you. I'd like to ask Major Wilson and Mr. Southworth how, with events like this, and then throughout the year, how engaged they find the younger generation in celebrating and commemorating these events, and interested to learn about the history of the armed forces, both in the island and wider?
I'll go first. Certainly the schools have been involved, and that example which I gave just now of £750, and the Just Giving page is still open, so I might as well put a plug in for it. If you're going to justgiving.com/fundraising and then search for 75 for VE 75, and you'll get into the Isleman Army Cadet Force fundraising page, go for it. They've reached their target, as I said. Day, they've got £750.
Okay. We lost you slightly there, Charles, but I know I know there's been lots of participation by young people. I know the schools and Manx National Heritage as well have been doing an absolutely wonderful job in getting messages out there, explaining it, and there's been real engagement. So I know certainly from young people, I know they are very much engaged with what's going on.
I hope you didn't lose the Just Giving page, did you?
We didn't. We just got that, Charles. You're all right. You managed to get the plug in there perfectly well. Okay, next up, I've got Tim from Manx Radio.
Come on, man. Get on that and get giving.
Okay, Tim from Manx Radio.
Yes, obviously commend the work that Edmund and Charles have done, especially with the circumstances they've had to deal with. And I just want to return to the senior race day bank holiday. It didn't leak out, as you suggest, because it was on the Timbald order paper for the May sitting. And there was no mention in that. It was just a straightforward, in the explanatory notes, a straightforward cancellation. The smell, I think, here is that there's been a bit of a U-turn here by government. And that's the accusation that's being made quite widely.
Well, I can fundamentally say that is not true. I sit on Council of Ministers as a minister. It was very, very clear when we first discussed it that with the cancellation was in order to come up with a date later on in order to celebrate our workers and our workforce and what everyone's done with the pandemic. That was clear from the first moment Council of Ministers discussed it. What we hadn't decided on was a date. There were plans that before we actually got to the Timbald sitting, it would actually be announced that we were moving another one. But in terms of me saying about leaking yesterday, my understanding was this press conference was held before the Timbald order paper was published, was my understanding. That was my understanding. But if that's incorrect, then it's incorrect. But certainly I can categorically say that there was always plans that there would be a bank holiday later in the year, because a lot of the economy is only just coming back into normality. Bank holidays can be a massive boost for our economic output, particularly around bars, clubs, restaurants, and they would be missing out on Senior Race Day. So it is much better, we think, and particularly with all the hard work that's been done, to be able to do it later in the year. And of course, the favoured date, which has now this morning been approved, which is the August, means that we have a 4-day bank holiday weekend. So that was the issue. We didn't have an approved date at that time. So the Chief Minister yesterday would have been damned if he did and damned if he didn't, because if he went out and said, well, actually, we're planning the bank holiday later in the year, and then it wasn't approved, then it would have backfired. If he didn't announce it, as he didn't, because we hadn't have it approved at that point, then obviously there's accusations of a U-turn. But I can categorically say right here, right now, that every discussion we have had around this at Council of Ministers has mentioned a later bank holiday in the year.
Thank you for clarifying that. It's more that this even came about because a lot of the comments we got were from the very frontline workers that we're talking about who work nearly all the hours they can. It's embedded in many employment contracts, and this was something that they were looking forward to.
Yeah, and that's exactly one of the reasons why we were looking at a bank holiday later in the year, because we do recognise it is embedded in some employment contracts, particularly in DHSC. My department, they've got the entitlement to the 10 bank holidays. So we think that it is much better to hold one, recognising all the hard work that they have done later in the year, where our entire wider economy can actually get the benefit of that as well, than doing it when we're far from normal. It would be in many ways, if we held the senior ace day bank holiday with where it is, in many ways it would be just like a normal day. It wouldn't really be that bank holiday. And let's not forget, we were in lockdown over Easter as well. So by doing it in the August, we've got that 4 days, which will make up for Easter. OK, next up, I've got Rob from 3FM.
Good afternoon, Minister. Hope you're well. Go on at the same subject here, but with regards to the bank holiday. Obviously, these final key decisions do rest with the Council of Ministers and lots considered. You've clarified a lot here, but how sometimes before these decisions are made, are these suggestions given to the likes of our key workers and members of the public or councils or whichever, for which they can consider and give their own feedback? Because with something like a public holiday, you know, there may be plans around it and so on.
Well, I mean, this took a life of its own, obviously. I don't think there's ever been so many people pay attention to the Timbald order paper, perhaps, as that we've had yesterday. The key thing is the whole plan was to announce it as a package before Timbald. So before we got to the actual sitting, there would be an announcement saying, as people will be aware, we're cancelling the senior ace day bank holiday, but we're planning on the bank holiday later in the year. That was always the plan for it. But obviously it took legs of its own yesterday when the Timbald order paper came out with the order on it. So we had to advance our plans and get approval for the date this morning so we could get it out there, the message that we were looking at something later in the year. So in terms of engagement, obviously it is entirely in the government's hands. When the bank holidays are, they're moved by order through Timbald. But we were planning, to be frank, and maybe it was very naive of us thinking back, we were planning on it being a nice surprise for people to say we wanted to have a day to recognise our frontline workers and all the work they've put in. Because the work and effort that people, particularly in my department and others like across Home Affairs and even out in the wider community, have put in to keep our island safe has been absolutely phenomenal. I've said time and time again how impressed I am with the way people have reacted. And I think it is important we recognise that. So maybe it was very naive of us in hindsight to think that we could actually do it as a nice surprise nearer the date of the Timbald sitting by announcing that later bank holiday. But that was, you know, that was the way it was designed.
OK, thank you. My second question on a slightly different note, something you mentioned yesterday, I believe, about plans for a phased return for non-essential healthcare. I know you haven't put any deadlines on that, but we're going to be in a situation where certain services are coming back, but large amounts of the medical workforce are still going to be involved in the fight against COVID-19. So if there is a backlog of appointments, how much longer are these people going to have to wait for the likes of clinics, appointments and operations once they do return?
At the moment, Rob, we can't put a timescale on that because we're going to have to assess the backlog, first of all, by speciality. Equally, we're going to have to see which services are turned back on, because as I've made absolutely clear from the very start, we are not going to go from a service being shut down to suddenly a service operating back at normal. If a service has been shut down, it's been shut down for a clinical reason as to why that service can't operate. And we're going to have to start unwinding that. So it is going to be stage by stage. There are, as you rightly say, staff at the moment who've been redeployed in the fight against COVID-19. And that has to be unwound as well, because we're not suddenly going to have this magic bank of extra staff to put back in to run those services. It will be those staff who are now in the battle against COVID-19 returning to normal duties. So we've got to equally balance that out to make sure we don't do anything that would actually damage our response, that we don't turn on a service that then pulls people away from something we still need to keep in place. So it is a very fine balancing act. There's guidance being drawn up now as to which services can resume and in what way and at what level. And I'm hopeful that I'll be able to make announcements around that before the end of next week.
Thank you.
And then last up, I've got Paul from MTTV.
Hello there, David. Can you just confirm, by the way, that tests are taking place today, being a bank holiday? Would that normal service be continuing?
My understanding is normal service is continuing.
Now, 4,500 people have signed a petition to keep the date for the senior race day bank holiday. That is a phenomenal amount of people in the Isle of Man. Clearly, this is touching a nerve. And whatever you're saying about it's going to be better later on, what do you say to those 4,500 people who want to keep it where it is?
Well, the first thing I would say, Paul, is I believe the petition was set up before the announcement, which we had been trying to keep as a surprise in a few weeks' time, that we were going to do a bank holiday later in the year. The petition is based on the fact, on my understanding, that people thought they were losing a bank holiday. As far as I'm aware, it wasn't set up after the announcement this morning of the later bank holiday. I've corresponded with quite a lot of people since yesterday, and every single one of them, I can actually say every single one that I have responded to since yesterday, and it's quite a number, when I've gone back and explained what was planned, they've actually come back and said, great idea, and they've been on board with it.
OK, so you're putting hope on the 28th of August. What happens if we're not in a position, you know, there's another spike, whatever? What do you do then? Do you move it again or do you go ahead with it under lockdown situation?
Well, I think the problem with the bank holiday is you can't. Well, first of all, we're not in lockdown situation unless we go very, very much backwards. We're in a stay safe mode now.
We are restricted in what we can do.
Yeah, I know what you mean about restrictions. But what I'm saying is we've got to fix a date. Bank holidays are done by statutory order, so they've got to come before Tynwald. Bear in mind, the reason we had to get the senior race day one to Tynwald when we do is we've got to hit the May deadline for this sitting. The August one wouldn't necessarily have to come forward as a statutory order until August, but because the senior race day is at the start of June, the last and a regular sitting of Tynwald for the order to come to is this month's. So we've got longer to get the statutory order for the next one in. We should be certainly on our plans, the way we're looking, it should be fine for that far out, the 28th of August. I personally think it's an ideal date because, like I say, it gives the 4 days then. We had disruption during Easter and it gives people a decent break for those who can take the bank holiday.
So should people pencil it in or should they say that's definitely going ahead?
Well, let's pencil things in for now, but I'd say it's as firm a definite as you can possibly ever give. But certainly we will be having a bank holiday to celebrate the work that the whole community and all of our professionals have done in pulling the island together at this very difficult time.
And will Tynwald Day definitely be a holiday or would that be likely to
There's
change?
No change at all to Tynwald Day. There's never been any plans to change Tynwald Day. Tynwald Day is our national day. It is staying in the calendar. It has always been in the calendar and it's not going anywhere.
Thank you.
Okay, Sam, you've got another question.
I just wonder if we could ask Major Wilson, Mr. Southworth, how they're spending VE Day with obviously commemorations being dropped. It'd just be interesting to see what they've decided to do for the day.
So not to put them on the spot, but I'll take Charles first.
I've had my garden party. I've been allowed to invite one person, so I invited our friend Mervyn Stokes. If you drive by my house, you will see that it is liberally decorated with bunting, Manx flags, British Legion flags, and the Union flag. And we sat in the garden at a respectable and proper distance. We didn't have a cup of tea. We had you were all waiting for me to say that we had a drink of alcohol of some sort. No, we didn't. We had a cup of coffee. We celebrated morning coffee and people waved as they went by and people tooted their horns and it's been great fun. I've had a very good VE day.
And Edmund, would you like to come in?
My wife and I have been sat outside. As I said earlier on, a cup of tea and listening to Glenn Miller on the radio. But really just personal reflection. I've been privileged, as I say, to see the work that my team have done on collecting some of the extracts from the Manx newspapers from the day. And it's very sobering to read the personal reflections of individuals who'd lost family members, and to just reflect. I was reflecting on my own father's war service, and the family implications of this. So whilst they've not been celebrating, with gin tonic and all the cake, it's been a very interesting time. And actually having time peaceful without planes overhead, without the traffic noise, just to reflect on some of these things is actually quite sobering, and sometimes a good thing to think back. And yes, we're celebrating, but also we're commemorating, particularly those who didn't return.
And Tim, I believe you've got another question.
Yeah, just all three of you, your thoughts on, obviously we're going through something that many of us haven't in our lifetime experienced, but it pales into insignificance to a degree, the sacrifices that we're making by staying behind a closed door compared to wartime, the Second and First World Wars, particularly the Second with the bombs raining down.
Very, very much so, as I said in my opening remarks there. The generation that came before us was asked to make a huge amount of sacrifices, and many of them made the ultimate sacrifice. They went to other lands and they never returned home. And I think it is important on days like this that we remember just the sheer sacrifice that everyone made, be they at the front line, out at war, or whether they stayed here on the island at home and they actually did their bit there. I think it's very important that we never, ever forget the lessons of history. I've said that before at this podium, and I think it is important that we do remember them. And I'll bring Edmund in now.
And if I just quote from Mona's Herald, Tuesday, the 15th of May, 1945, leading seaman Douglas Corlett, Victoria Ramsay, has returned home on VE Day. He's been a prisoner of war for 4.5 years and had a tough time. I don't think any of us can contemplate or think, just because we've had a few weeks with things being delivered to our doors. And yes, it's stressful, and yes, it's difficult for people, but I don't think we can consider what life was like in armed conflict.
Charles, is there anything you would like to add?
I'd just like to endorse what has already been said. And this morning, for example, during our simple garden party, we of course stood at 11 o'clock and held our 2 minutes silence. And you are quite right, all of you, in that the sacrifices that were made during the war were of course enormous. However, sacrifices have been made in this present crisis, particularly in the United Kingdom. And I think that also has brought life into perspective for us. And we need to remember that as well.
Thank you. Before we move away from questions, there's two things I want to raise. First is a post I saw circulating on social media last night about healthcare workers at Nobles and in relation to the positive cases. As I confirmed, there was two of the cases confirmed over the last couple of days were healthcare workers. There was one earlier in the week as well. So it is correct that there were three cases. None of them through the contact tracing so far have been identified as having the contagion because of their work. I need to make that absolutely clear. But obviously there were certain comments made in that particular social media post that I do want to address, which is firstly, there is two of the healthcare workers that worked in the same area, not all three. The other one worked elsewhere. And the other thing I need to raise is that when people work in the environment, as these two healthcare workers do, they work in full medical grade PPE. Now, the thing with PPE is it protects the wearer, but it also helps at medical grade, it protects those around them as well. So contract tracing has been done as it would in all cases. So the people who are at risk are not people who are working with them, who are also in full medical PPE, but it's those who would come into contact with them when they are not wearing the PPE. That contact tracing has been done, and those people who have come into contact with them when they haven't been in PPE have been advised to self-isolate. Infection control has been in as well and has assessed the process, and they are content with the actions that have been taken. And so all those that are relevant and are classed as a risk by these two cases have already been contacted and identified. I have to emphasise again that, unfortunately, social media is a great tool. It keeps people in touch with one another, particularly at times like this. But sometimes it can also have the wrong effect. And sometimes posts without the full detail and the full context can be unhelpful. So I know, Paul, you probably want to come in on this, so I'll let you come in and then I'll
I touched on a care home, didn't I, the other day? Can you confirm or deny or tell us anything if there is an association with a care home with these workers?
You've actually taken the second point I was going to take. It's not these workers or Nobles Hospital workers, these three. I'll come to care home in a minute, if I may, if I just finish this point. So the risk around healthcare workers and those who come into contact with them are those not that are working with them in PPE, but those that are around them when they're not wearing PPE. Because the whole point of PPE is it lowers the risk, it keeps the other people safe as well. That contact tracing has been done as normal, and anyone who is at risk has been advised to self-isolate accordingly. In relation to the care home, I got the information after we spoke yesterday. There has been one positive case in one other care home. At the moment, I can't name that care home because there is still just the one case. So it's classed as identifying that patient. But obviously, if there's any further cases, then I can name it. But in relation to that, there have been further testing undertaken and all other tests have come back negative.
And will you be now taking complete tests of everyone in that care home, the workers, all the residents? Will they now all immediately have a test?
So those that are at risk, so associated with this case, testing has been undertaken. And my understanding is all those other tests have now come back negative. The person is not a hospital admission. They have been moved into Newlands, I believe, which, of course, is our community part up at the hospital. But they are not actually an admission to hospital and they are recovering as normal while a deep clean takes place of the area they were in. OK, Tim.
Yeah, I think I know the post you're referring to, and it was a post, I think, from somebody who worked in that particular department, and they were asking for the other members of staff to be tested. Is that the one you're referring to?
It is indeed. And I think we've got to remember there's a misunderstanding here again, which I have to address several times, around testing and the purpose of testing. Mm-hmm. Testing is to identify if people are showing symptoms. The general purpose for testing is to actually identify if they have COVID-19 and then off the back of that, find out who they've been in contact with and self-isolate. As Dr. Khan explained last Monday when he stood here at this podium, if you test early in someone's asymptomatic stage, there is a risk of ending up with a false negative, where you will end up with a negative result back because it's the early stages of incubation of the virus, but the person still is asymptomatic and going through that journey. So we are expanding tests for key workers, but I say again, it's targeted testing in certain circumstances. Anyone who has been working with the person in full PPE would not require a test because they've been wearing the relevant protective equipment. We have actually had infection control in to check. They have checked the logs. They have checked how the equipment's been being used. And they have confirmed to us that that equipment has been in use and it has been used correctly, which will protect those working around the individual.
So are we referring to one of the COVID wards here? We're talking about full PPE.
I'm not allowed to divulge. I've been instructed or told I'm not allowed to divulge precisely where, because, again, it's identifying information which could be relevant to the two healthcare workers. But what I can say is they are related to Nobles Hospital. But what they do and they undertake, they would be wearing the relevant PPE. Okay, well, thank you very much indeed. Oh, and sorry, there was one other thing I did want to mention, because Charles very helpfully mentioned about bunting and having all his bunting up. I don't want to embarrass you, Tim, but I've heard stories this afternoon that you've gone out of your way as well, that you and Jane have got the house very well decked up, I believe. So thank you very much.
I have to say that's more Jane's work than mine.
Modest as ever, Tim. But yeah, I believe it's absolutely fabulous. And I've been getting fabulous reports of people who've been walking and driving past. So thank you for getting into the spirit of it. So in closing, I think it's important that we must never forget the sacrifices our community and the wider world made all those many years ago that made V-Day possible. Today in 2020, we are as a nation and as a community asking people to make different forms of sacrifice for the wider benefit of the island we all love. It is not easy, and at times it is heartbreaking and frustrating. But I know in my heart that this generation will rise to face its challenges and surmount them, just as the previous generation did all those years ago. So remember, stay home where you can, stay safe, and protect your community. Today, on the 75th anniversary of VE Day, and in the days, weeks, months, and years to come, as we think back to all those who made the ultimate sacrifice those many years ago, we will remember them. Thank you.